everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Transitions Tuesday here on Mind Talk. Every Tuesday, you and I learn about a transition, whether it's a transition that someone has gone through individually or whether it's a transition for a broad number of people. Tuesdays are all about transitions. And I would suggest to you that in the world in which we live today, there really needs to be significant transitions around the ways in which community and police officers deal with each other. And today's guest, Marcus L. Walker, is one person who is working diligently to bring about a recalibration in the world around us, who in fact has created a program entitled Bridging the Gap. Marcus L. Walker is often referred to as a leader for change. He's been a public service figure for over 20 years, working in a variety of industries, including nonprofit, education, music, athletics. He indeed has been very busy. His history includes a former run for state senator. He's been a thought influencer, establishing audiences in locations across the nation. And under his leadership, cooperative alliances have substantially increased their operational stability, as well as strengthened networks and communicative abilities of diverse educational, organizational, and residential communities. Marcus L. Walker, welcome to Mind Talk.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Marcus, I am delighted to meet you. I'd like to start with Marcus as a little one. Tell us where you were born and what your early experiences were like.
Well, I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota, and which is probably a little bit more known as the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so we call that cold country up there. If you've never been there, it gets quite cold, but certainly I love my hometown, and that's where I was born and raised. I'm a son of an educator as well as he's a pastor, and so I had some early training into the development of one's holistic life, and so for myself, I've journeyed into a lot of things early off in life, just having a chance to be involved with music, of course, sports. And as I went on and to college, I had a passion to go back and teach young males in the urban areas. And so that was basically my path. I came back, I started teaching high school. I taught high school for a little over 10 years, and I was at a high school that was actually 95% minority and 91% free and reduced lunch. And so, you know, there were situations where we were dealing with kids who had transient lives, and it was the most awesome experience I could have ever had. It really shaped me to be able to give back and to be able to help mold. We had a statement that we would say we were trying to build better young men, not just better young athletes.
Interesting.
So it's those were some of my early years teaching, and so from that, over some years, you start seeing situations that happen in society, and passion, a fire within inside you start to develop, because you want to be a voice for that. I didn't want to stand on the sidelines. And so what happened is I developed a passion for some politics just on the side, not to become a full politician, but more or less to become a voice at the table. We understand that the people that make the laws and create the laws, that's what affects us the local level. So I had a run. I decided to go for a state Senate run. Of course, it came out of the blue, because that wasn't necessarily my path. But I would tell people that I met 50,000 plus people, and that really planted the seeds for where I am now, and what my my mission and goal is now. But I can tell you it's been a life of, as you mentioned, when you're able to cross various arenas, you know, step into different fields, and those things, every experience has shaped me to who I am today.
Well, Marcus,
I wouldn't trade any of it.
Marcus, I want to back up a bit because you said a moment ago that your work at the high school level with the students was something that had a profound impact on the person you became, the person you are. How so? I mean, as you describe the population you were working with, there are many people who would say, oh, no, please, I don't even want to work with that population. But you stayed for 10 years and found a real passion and a real fire within in the work. What was that about for you?
Before you get a chance to experience others, it's that old statement, it's walking in others' shoes. And so you don't know the path or their journey until you've had a chance to step into their shoes. And so what I have found is that every single one of these young people had a gift, had a talent, had a great future in front of them. But what I also found is most of them hadn't had life and encouragement spoken to them on a daily basis. I truly believe in the things that you hear, the things that you read. Those things start to develop your brain, and they start to develop your behaviors. And when you're not getting that positive reinforcement on a consistent basis, then to go down the wrong track. And so that was one of the things I've seen is when we came in, here's a prime example. We understand that reading isn't a great subject for a lot of our youth these days. They say teens don't like to read anymore, right? It's a social media age. It's a digital age. And so you hardly see kids picking up a book. Well, what we did is we looked at, this was part of when I was coaching, we looked at an entire group of people and said, what can we do to change this? And so myself, superintendent, principal, we got together and we talked about a program that we could just pilot. We were just going to test pilot this. And what it was a reading program called Sports Literature. And what we did is we took just boys alone and we put them in a class, and every day, what we would do is we would have the kids come in, they would journal about sports things, we would read the newspaper, but we would read the sports page. What we figured out is we could get these kids to read if it's something they're interested in. We may, you know, and then what happens is once you get them to start liking to read, now you introduce other things for them to read, but first you got to get them to like to read, so that comes from an interest. Well, we know that most young males like sports, and so what we did is we would challenge them, pick your favorite athlete, write about them, and so all of a sudden what we've seen is change. 3 weeks in, I'll have a kid come in, Mr. Walker, last night I actually picked up the newspaper on my own and just read this article. Those are the things that told me we were making progress.
Those are
right?
The wonderful
when
moments.
You see the light bulb. Yeah, moments that just change you, and you say, these are things, we're giving these kids tools to succeed for life, right? It's you know, they say you feed a person for one day, that's great, but teach them how to fish for themselves and feed themselves for life, and so we're giving them the reading tools, and so it was just programs such as those that impacted me on a certain level where it says, this is where it's at. This life is about, as Maya Angelou always says, when you get, you give. And so that's what you have. If you got it and if you can teach it, you give it back to others, to their toolbox. And so, yeah, that was just a moment I know that comes right to my mind about the impact at the high school level.
Did you have anyone in your earlier years who was the kind of mentor to you that it sounds like you were to your students?
There were two. One is just my father. What a great man. And I'm, of course, I'm biased, but I also hear this from many people. My father's a public servant. and been in the Twin Cities area for over 50 years. And what I've watched is a man who has been organic, a man who has been authentic. He treats everyone fair. He treats everyone with respect. I've seen people do certain things that probably weren't becoming or in the business realm. I've seen some things happen to him. I've seen some things happening on the faith level when he's been a pastor. And I can tell you that his response has always been gentle and kind. And what that has done, that's funny you ask me that, because I told him one day that indirectly he didn't even understand that he was teaching us how to be men. I'm one of five boys, and my family no girls, and so I've been privileged to have four older brothers to also look up to. But I can tell you that my father has directly and indirectly, just by seeing him do things, seeing him operate, seeing him live and treat mankind in a certain way, I think that shaped my thought process, my ability to connect and coordinate with people, and those things just, again, it helped my thought process as far as being focused on that and knowing how to live, how to go day to day. The second person that comes to mind is one of my teachers. He was an English teacher in high school named Mr. Gray. Again, Mr. Gray was just an honest man. And what I remember from him most is him giving us honest lessons and life lessons. He would tell us things such as, and I still quote this to this very day, he used to say, "Look around the room. Everybody here won't be living even in 15 years. Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, as a high schooler, that shocks you, right? You're like, what are you talking about, right?
Absolutely.
It's like, Mr. Gray. But that was the first thing he said. Then he would say, but then there's others here that you will never see again, and there may be one person in this room that you will know for the rest of your life. But he was like, now, think about that. Right now, you think everybody's your friend. Everybody's going to go on with life with you. It's going to be this way. And no, life changes. And that statement alone has stuck with me since I was 17 years old. And so he used to, what I would call those were golden nuggets. We would say, what kind of golden nuggets you got today, Mr. Gray, right? And so he would just tell us things of that so that, as we call it, a toolbox. You could put those things in your toolbox, and later on in life, when it's time to use the screwdriver of understanding, then you pull that out. And next time when it's time to use the pliers of love, then you pull that out and use that. Right? And so I just remember him giving us great golden nuggets often, particularly during my senior year of high school.
Did you know in your senior year of high school that the path you're on now is the path you would take, or did you have other plans?
I did not. Actually, I wanted to coach professionally at some point. I was doing music, of course, coming from a music family, so I knew that I was going to have music in my future, not necessarily as my day-to-day. But I wanted to coach. I knew I wasn't going to be a professional player, professional ball player. So, and I felt like coaching was a great way to connect back. And I had great coaches in my life as well. And so when I went off to school, I actually had no idea that I would be in this realm, as far as a realm of public service in this way, in this capacity, in education, in social justice. And I hadn't thought about those things. And of course, when you're at that age, selfishly, you're more or less you may be thinking about what kind of job you're going to get good pay, right? And not necessarily about what impact it will have. That was I'm just talking from my paradigm. And so, that strangely enough, that was not, it was not in my focus at all. And it's just the way life works.
You know, I'm struck by the way in which you said you knew you weren't going to be an athlete, so you chose to coach. And the way that you said it and talk about coaching, it seems like a completely fulfilling space and place for you to have been. And I think about so many young people today who want to be athletes. That's all they want to be. They want to be, you know, athletes who you see on television and make lots of money. And it's so hard for them to, A, acknowledge that they may or may not have that opportunity, whether they're quote-unquote good athletes or not, and that there are other things they can do that are sports-related that are just as valuable and in some ways may be more long-lasting in terms of the people they impact.
Every day we would come in. Before we had practice, we would call it classroom time. And so at classroom time, my mission was to do exactly what Mr. Gray did for me, was to drop golden nuggets on these young men. And I was very honest with them. I can tell you that you just mentioned something about a lot of the young people having these goals, these dreams to play professional sports. And, of course, there's glamour, there's glory, right? They see all those things. There's glitz. And I would tell these kids, I would say, 1 in 17,000 athletes make it to the pros once a year. That's an astonishing statistic.
Is that a real number?
That's a real number. In fact, That was 10 years ago. It may be higher, right? It's 1 in 17,000. And that, because think about it, how many athletes are in sports across this nation? We have so many AAU leagues and high schools and all of these kids. If your one goal is to get to a league, hey, let's look at basketball. They only keep 14 players on one team. That's not great. Your chances are not very good, right? And so I tell people, I never want to crush your dreams. If you can make it to that level, that's great, and I support everything that you want to do to get there. At the same time, what you should do is have a contingency plan, just like we do for everything else in life, right? We have a fire extinguisher for a fire, right? We have a phone, a 911 system to call when there's an emergency. So there's a contingency plan for everything. So knowing that for your life, okay, I want to be an athlete. But even when my career's done, wouldn't I want to be a doctor? Wouldn't I want to be a teacher? Wouldn't I want to be a lawyer? Whatever it is that you want to be, construction, then you should also develop that skill as well and make sure that you're thinking parallel. And so those are things I would, again, I took a page out of Mr. Gray's book, which is being honest with the young people so that they can reach back and pull this tool out and say, this is helpful for me in this situation. I think that a lot of our kids right now to this day, when I go into a school, if I go into an organization, or if I talk to a group of people, I can talk to a group of college athletes when I go and I do some what I call encouragement seminars and things like that. The first thing I say is, how many people in here plan on going to the pros? And you wouldn't believe how many people raise their hand. There's still a lot of young men that believe that's where they're going, and the chances are just very slim. And so I'm just honest with them and say, hey, that's great. And then I give them alternatives. Like I said, hey, how about coaching? That's something to look into. How about being a sports trainer? That's another thing that can give you longevity, right? And how about being a sports agent? And so I just try to give them other ideas, just to think a little bit more openly about this. If this is what you want to do, right? We're not out to crush people's dreams or steer people this way or that way. That's not my job, but my job is to maybe offer you some other ways and to help you. And so hopefully we've done that, and we'll continue to do that.
The impact of coaches on the lives of the young people with whom they work, is so extraordinary. And, you know, you and I know that there are times when parents are happy with the influence or not so happy with the influence. But I have to think that the parents of the young people that you have worked with, continue to work with, are so grateful that you're there to guide and teach their children in a way that gives them hope and gives them options. Marcus, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue. Certainly, we've been talking about young men in particular, but children who are interested in sports, and we've been talking a lot about young African American children. So I'd like to sort of leap forward to the kinds of things that you're thinking about today, just as we look at the communities around us, just across the planet, and what's going on. You have a program that is entitled Bridging the Gap. Before we talk about Bridging the Gap, which I know is part of what you do, do you have any particular concerns about young people, particularly African American people, and young African American children, young men and young women, in the world that we're living in today?
So many things that this generation, this younger generation, is facing. Particularly, we're talking about African American youth, and one thing that just sticks out to me right away is just when we talk about the family structure, because a high percentage of those young people aren't privileged, aren't in situations where they can see that on a day-to-day basis. The breakup of the family has really been a destructive force, and a lot of our young people are in jail. A lot of them have chosen to not educate themselves, right? And so what you see is a destruction. It's a cyclical, damaging cycle that basically has taken a group of people, a culture of people, steps backward. And I know that, you know, there were years, early years, that what, 80 years ago, you know, when we fought to have a fair education, to be able to have certain rights. Now I think that this generation, it's like that has been alienated. There's a lot of frustration because of the economic situation that hasn't advanced. But it starts with the family, because if we don't have a family, how are we going to continue to raise our children in a certain way? And pass it on.
I wonder what your thoughts are. I think that in terms of what may be missing or challenging in some of these families, it's true that some of the family members may be incarcerated, and we know that there is a disproportionate number of people who are looked at as being criminals, disproportionately arrested, disproportionately jailed, with disproportionate sentences, or, you know, someone who's having to work two or three jobs just to maintain one apartment and one or two children, if you will. So as we talk about the impact on the family, I think it's just so important to acknowledge that there are many things, there are many experiences outside of the core family that can impact terribly, quite frankly, on the family structure, that it's not just about these people over here don't know how to do family, and so it's all terrible, which is not what you're saying. I just want to make the point clear.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, and I 100% agree with you. Yeah, and of course, that can it can be perceived in a certain way. Every now and then, I'll turn on, you know, some radio that may be to the right or to the left, and it's amazing to hear the opinions of those that may not know, but they look and they say, "Hey, this is what it looks like to me," and then there's a judgment about why a family or a group of people, or in this case, again, African Americans are in this situation, right? So you kind of make a generalized thought about things or have a general perception about things, but it may not be the case. And you're right, so many things go into why this can be the case. I just know for sure when you look at 50 years ago, families were stronger. And so what that does allow is that allows us to lean on each other in those times when we're facing hard times. We're celebrating joys together, but we're also carrying and lifting each other during those hard times. And of course, when any portion of the family member is missing, then it's an overtaxing on whoever is left in that family, right? And so this is what has continued to happen, and so that sticks out to me when you talk about our young people and them not seeing that. This generation glorifies singleness, right? Beyonce yes. had a song called Single Ladies. There was another song by a young man that called females a terrible degrading name and says they're not loyal. Okay, so, and these kids are running around singing this. And so what happens is subconsciously you're now developing a thought process about the other species, about, okay, I don't need a mate. Hey, I can just make it. And it's like, of course, we all, it's not about need. It's about, this is the design, and this would be a great way for life to be if you have a family. And so I think just we don't have enough glorification of that side of it. You know, you listen to music 50 years ago, and there were songs about love, like Al Green, right? And of today's culture, it's just songs, again, about hate, about not needing, a lot of degrading each other. And so I just think that's what we're facing now.
So what I'm hearing from you, which quite frankly is the experience for so many people, there are ways that you grew up that felt affirming and solidifying, if you will, in terms of your sense of yourself in the world. And today we've got a glorification of any number of things, certainly the music, and I know music is one of your loves, but what I'm hearing you say is that some of the music today is really quite concerning. For many years, people grew up with the notion that all you need to do is to get a good education and you're golden. But then we look at the specter of racism and all kinds of discriminations, and now I think perhaps our people are thinking maybe not so much. It would be easy for you to imagine that all the things that you grew up with, that you believed, that you celebrated, are being called into question in any number of ways today, and yet you've developed a program that you're offering at no cost called Bridging the Gap, the Exchange. How did you avoid getting caught up in the things are so terrible, I might as well just go home and stay there? So many people have gotten caught up in that view.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I was fortunate enough to have, just my early surroundings. And one of the things I learned in life is you have to keep going. Even when things are tough, you have to keep going. And it's just, as they say, time waits for no one, right? And that's, we all get the same 24 hours in a day. And what you do with your 24 hours, if you're making great strides and making great progress, and I'm not, well, I can only blame myself. Right. And so that was my thought process. And so that has allowed me to all the tough times in my life, because I've surely had them just like everyone else. You know, the the human experience is a roller coaster. That's just the truth. We go through seasons where it's tougher and seasons where things are a little bit more joyous. And that's just the cycle of life, and we will all have them, whether that's through relationships or financial situations, health situations, you name it. But this is the experience of the human. So I've always kept that mindset that you just have to keep going. And that's what I've done. And I think, bringing me all the way up to now, I mean, the truth is I'm truly frustrated about the way things have been in our society, in our communities these past few years. Things have been going on. We've had one thing we can agree on for sure is that relationships between our police and our communities have taken steps backwards. We can all agree there's been tension between those two different relations. And so I've been known to be a bridge builder, relationally. I've been known to be a person that they say is a re-engineer strategist, which is going into a situation and looking at what may be difficult to most, but to me may just be a challenge to say, how can I get two ends of the spectrum to get a little bit closer? Now, we're not talking about eliminating nothing. We're just saying the reduction and the closeness, a little bit more of an understanding, the exchange. This is where my heart is now. I've seen us be a group of, and I'm saying us meaning us in society, meaning we have been reactionary. I've decided to be proactive. And which is wanting to go into situations and see if we can prevent versus go and protest it.
So let me understand what bridging the gap is all about, because I notice that you're combining professional athletes with law enforcement. I got to tell you, my head spun around when I saw that you were offering it at no cost. So what exactly is bridging the gap, the exchange? Help me unspin my head.
Will do. Well, let me tell you, your head wasn't the only one spinning. My team said, are you okay? Is everything all right? Well, let me tell you how this all came to be. Now, Bridging the Gap, the Exchange, that program is, in a nutshell, that's meant as a program to recalibrate police and community relationships. Again, I just spoke to the fact that there's been a series of events, over years that have happened. And the tension has continued to rise. And so what I've done is I said, well, what have we been doing? What has been the outcome of these situations? I can remember that most of the time there can be a shooting, a killing. I know that there's protesting. I know that there's praying. I know that there's a demand for change. I know that there's grand juries. I know that there's an internal investigation, internal affairs. But the common denominator out of this is there seems to be no real movement in the outcomes of these situations. And so I said to myself, now, first of all, let me say this, because I don't want anyone listening to feel like I'm against any of those things. Trust me, hey, protesting, praying, a demand down at the law office, going down and demanding change from your Congress. Those things are necessary, and so there's a lane and an arena for everybody. I guess for myself is I'm just tired. I'm tired of doing all of those things. I've done all those things, and I haven't seen the change that I seek. As Gandhi says, be the change that you seek, and so I haven't seen that change. And so I started saying to myself, what can I do with my skill set, with my experience, with my walk of life with my sphere of influence, what can I do? If you're a bridge builder, if you know how to take different groups of people, if you know how to take people at who can think totally differently, but get them to see something, to get commonalities and uniquities, and to see those things amongst each other. And so the challenge was, how can I do this? What would be the best way? And so as I began to research and get my thoughts down on paper and try to put this together, one of the things I really thought about is, with the police, what would I want to see from the police? Well, the truth is this. A lot of it's about fear. I met one of the coaches I met early off, a white gentleman. He came from a small town in Kansas, and he told me he had never, ever encountered a black person up close until he was 23 years old.
I believe it.
The only thing he had ever seen of a black person was on TV, which was on the news for crime, on the TV for sports, or for music and entertainment, okay? And so he had a certain perception of what black people were, right? We were athletic people, but we could be violent. And so what happened was, he, as soon as he got out of college, his first teaching placement was in an inner city school. Well, he was scared to death.
I'm sure he was.
Because of what he saw. Exactly. But guess what this man told me? He said, I walked into this school and I found out these young men were no different than me. They like a lot of the same things I like, and they dislike a lot of things I dislike. And we found that we had so many things in common, and he said it just allowed me to learn more about a person. Well, I thought about him. I'm thinking, what we need to do is break down the fear process. Right, a lot of these shootings and a lot of things that happen is because of the fear. I'm afraid of what this gentleman's going to do. Okay, well, how about we address that fear? How about we go in and we do some actual simulations, not just a trainer in front of you standing there, but how about we go in and we do some actual simulations, live simulations, and I have one that I do that's called poverty simulation, which takes you, it gives you a look into the world of someone living in poverty.
Mm.
Not because I want you to have sympathy, but more or less, I just want you to understand. I want you to understand the way life is over here. Okay? And so what happens is I wanted to address the police and break down the fear, but then I also realized, wait a second, Marcus, there's fear in the community as well. There's fear from...
Right.
The citizens against the police. So here is this common denominator, which is fear. And so I said to myself, we've got to bridge this gap. And : the exchange, right? What is the exchange? That's a shared understanding that life is more common than we think it is. That's a look into our lives, a cross look, a cross reference into each other's lives to understand just a little bit better. That's an agreement to challenge our personal spheres of influence around us, like when you have a racist relative, like when you have a racist friend and you call them to the mat on it, when they say something that's unbecoming. But when you don't say something, you're part of the problem. And so my thing was, how can I get a program together to bridge the gap? Well, that was it for me in itself. Let's call it bridging the gap. The exchange. What is the exchange? It's the exchange between the police and the community. And what we're exchanging is we are exchanging those things, and we are building ourselves relationally. We are recalibrating the way that we have a relationship amongst each other. And so bridging the gap is a parallel training. What happens is I go into cities, go into communities, and I will do a training with the police on one evening, and on the next evening or day, we have a session for the community. And so we're challenging.
Marcus, the community session, the community session, is that with the police or without the police?
That is without the police.
Okay.
Why? Because, yeah, and I'll tell you my thinking on that. What happens is we have forums often. In fact, after every, most of the time when there's a shooting or when there's a uproar in the community, we have a couple officers come, the police chief. This happens everywhere, right? But what that's, all that's doing is coddling the emotional situation that's going on at that time. And oftentimes it berates the police officers, because a lot of times community citizens are pretty upset. And it comes out, probably doesn't get articulated in the greatest of ways. And so those sessions aren't always beneficial.
I can understand that. Marcus, let me interrupt you, because we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I really want to dive in a bit deeper into how you create the environment that even allows these two populations to come together and to do the work that you're talking about. So, folks, we will be back in just a minute. And, Marcus, that's where we will pick up. How do you make this happen? In today's world, there's barely a day and certainly not a week that goes by that we don't hear about some clash somewhere between the community and the police department. You're talking about literally bridging the gap that exists between these two, for many people, very, very different entities. How do you create a space that actually allows the work that you're talking about to be done?
So, the program, what happens is we train, but that's just the initial seed being planted. What happens after that is the follow-up and the accountability partnerships. Okay, and so what we do is we get key community leaders, and they will be accountability partners with various police officers at various levels through their communities. What we do for the police is we call them, if you've heard of continuing education, of course, in the education world, every teacher has to continue to have continuing education hours. And so what I thought about and created is what I call a continuing community requirement for police. What that means is a certain amount of hours will be required from them from community situations, some volunteer situations, some relational building, going to read at the area elementary school for 30 minutes twice a week or once a week, whatever that is, going to coach. But volunteering, and because what happens is when you build relationships, you're breaking down that fear that we talk about. It's not going to happen overnight. And the truth is, Dr. Brewer, this is not a kumbaya. This is not, the mission is not to get everybody to love each other, because that's impossible. It's impossible to change everybody's mindset. We're not going to eliminate racism, but what we will do is we will reduce racism in those communities that we go to. So the follow-up happens with the accountability partnerships, as well as the requirements from the police to have community credits. These key leaders in the community haven't been called to the mat either. Right, a lot of community leaders tend to react and show up when there's a clash. What we need them to do is to be proactive as a part of a program, and these things will have long-lasting effects in every community that we go to. The key is this, though. The truth is, you had mentioned athletes. I have designated athletes to partner with to make this happen. Now, people say, "Why athletes?" You can partner with anybody. Well, the truth is, athletes have one of the most influential voices of our time.
It's true.
It's just the truth. If you look at a lot of their social handles, they'll have millions and millions of followers. And if LeBron James says, "I like Fruity Loops," then a lot of people probably like Fruity Loops just because LeBron does, right? So a lot of them don't even understand the power of influence. Some of them do, some of them don't. What I do know about is most of the athletes come from communities that I have worked in and lived in. They come from communities that see high rates of poverty, achievement gaps. And so my thing is, why wouldn't an athlete want to be, since you have resources to help? We're not asking athletes to change the world. But what we are asking is, hey, how about the community you grew up in? How about you adopt that community and you help us make this program possible in that community? Okay, Carmelo Anthony, you're from Baltimore. Let's just take Baltimore, just that one city, and let's see if we can get this parallel training going between police and community. And guess what? You're a major figure in this. And it helps your family because your family's still there. And you love the city of Baltimore. And most of those gentlemen do have a heart, and they do have a heart for change. But they don't know how to do it.
Right.
And frankly, they don't have time to do it because that's not the area of expertise they're in, right? They're playing ball. And so I'm sure you don't have a lot of time to be on the streets, maybe fighting for a certain thing. But what you can do is partner with people that can help you and extend your voice. And so athletes are, because, of course, I've been in coaching as well, and I understand that life, and I understand that they will know that I can connect with them on a certain level. And I think that they care enough about what's been going on. Obviously, look at some of the things that athletes have done over the years, right? They have taken a stand. They've taken stands for social justice. And so I've said, let's make that a greater impact. And so that's what we've done. We've identified athletes to partner with. And so that's the way we will pull this off city by city.
Are you in the market for identifying additional athletes? If someone is interested who's listening, should they get in touch?
We are partnering with professional athletes from all four professional franchises, hockey, baseball, basketball, football.
That's great.
And actually, say if you play soccer and you want to do something, please give me a call, right? Because the truth is, we know that your voice is great. But at the same time, we know that you want to be a part of change. You want to see some change. And a lot of you would love to help. And so I'd love to sit down, talk it out, create a strategy, create a plan, adopt your city, adopt your community, create change and be the change that we all see.
What kind of feedback are you getting from police officers about the training?
I can tell you it's been phenomenal and surprisingly pleasant. What I have found, my fear, here it is, the word fear. My fear was that police would feel a little defensive about someone telling them that they want to come in and train them. Well, here's the key. First thing is I really try to remove the word train because I think that they feel like, well, hey, we're already trained. We're trained officers. Well, that's great. What I did is I used the word recalibrate.
Yes.
Re-engineer. So I would use those words, and so to say to them, this is the way we need to think about things. Can we rethink this situation? And I think that what has happened is most police chiefs I've dealt with now have said, hey, we've been looking for some way to show the public that we do care, we do want change, but it doesn't happen fast enough. And with the police, when if the public doesn't see a conviction, right, if they don't see an arrest right away, then it's an uproar. And so what we're saying is, hey, how about we do some preventative measures? How about we do some things to show the public we're trying even before something like this happens? And you know what? We may not prevent all murders and all shootings and all class situations, but what will happen is we can reduce those things by relational building and breaking down those walls of fear.
What are some of the cities that you've gone to?
Austin, Texas, then Cleveland, Ohio, then, of course, Twin Cities. We've been several cities out west, a few cities on the East Coast, actually, here, and we're looking to get into the South region as well, even more north. Of course, northwest, we'd love to get there as well. There's been so many cities, I could certainly can't name them all, but I can tell you that every time we go and we deal with the community and we deal with the police, we walk out of there feeling like we've left them in a better situation. Now, of course, what happens is I follow up with every community leader that we've made an accountability partner, every police officer that we've made an accountability partner, and this is the way that we ensure moving forward that we're building relations, that we're recalibrating those relationships.
So you have a police officer, a community leader, and an athlete in these cities, and the three of them are identified as community partners. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, actually, we have multiple, so it'd be multiple officers,
okay,
multiple community leaders. Yeah, so when we identify those community leaders, what we want to do is make several people accountable for the way your community is. We're all responsible for safe, healthy communities, all of us, right? The police have their jobs, but the citizens also have their jobs. And so what we're doing is we're making them all accountable along with the athlete, because it gives it a public, a little bit more of a public face. And that's accountability as well, right, when it comes down to that. And an athlete feels like an ambassador, because you have now been a major key in bridging this gap, right? And so that's we have our athlete, but we also identify key community leaders as well as several police officers on various levels, whether it's the police chief, it's a commander, it could be just a beat officer, right? But what we do is we're making accountability partners, and it's ongoing with no end date, no expiration.
No expiration. This is not 6 weeks and then we go back to business as usual.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Relational building takes time. We all know that, right? It's even in any relationship you can think of, great relationships have really taken time. And it takes time to build. It takes time to just understand one another. You know, one of the things I challenge police is I used to say, hey, what? How about you just walk up to a stranger and say, hey, my name is Frank. What's your name? And then you can say, I like chocolate chip ice cream. What kind of ice cream you like? And he might tell you, or she might tell you. But that in itself, we're just finding some common things that we like. Hey, I may not like chocolate chip ice cream, but guess what? You just broke down a fear wall just by simply offering your hand, just by simply saying, this is my name. And it's a win-win for everybody. You feel great yourself because you've done that, but you've also made the person that you've extended that hand to feel great as well. And it's the exchange, right? In itself, and that's what we're looking to do more and more. We just want to challenge. Now, again, we're not just making this about police, because I don't want police to feel like they're the only ones responsible for change. We're saying the same thing to citizens. Hey, how about you walk up to an officer when you see him on duty, standing, you know, and see him or her, and they're standing there, and how about you just walk up and you just shake your hand and say, hey, my name is Lisa, and I just want to thank you for your service. You may have just broken down a fear wall. So this is what we're challenging both sides to do everywhere we go.
I can imagine both sides almost being speechless the first time that happens, that a police officer just casually goes up to a community member to say hello, or vice versa. I mean, the fear that you talk about, that is so widely spread, particularly in today's world, makes it such that just walking up to somebody to say hello, in fact, takes courage, especially if it's somebody you don't know, which is a shame.
Absolutely.
But that's the world in which we live. And again, what I'm hearing from you is that you don't get exhausted by the ongoing, and sadly it truly is ongoing, violence, shootings, killings that we're hearing about in the communities. It sounds like it almost energizes you to keep doing the work.
That's exactly right. It does energize you, because you understand that there are 18,000 police departments, law enforcement agencies across the United States. Even if I only picked out 1% of that at 1,800, you know, that's a lot of that's a lot of relationships to build, right? And so you understand that this work is never done.
Right.
There are so many communities in need of repair between, as far as relationally, between them and the police. And so, yeah, every time something happens, what you say is, we've got to address this, but how about we address them and try to get the next situation prevented? How can we do that? You know, if you're a city that has had, and we can say there has been a hotbed of a couple of them that has had clashes. Well, we're certainly working with those, but we're also picking out cities that haven't had much, but also have the threat of it. And so there are there's just countless opportunities for us to go in and to build relationships. And I am committed to transformative change in communities across this nation.
Are police departments and communities coming to you, or are you identifying them, or is it both?
It has been both. I can tell you early off that I've identified many that I knew were in situations that were in need of repair. You've seen high turnover rates. You've seen internal turmoil, situations where there's been some crime going on behind the scenes. So we identified them early off. But what happens is, when something's going pretty good, it's like a good restaurant and somewhere good to eat. And I think one police chief might have called over to the next city and said, hey, this is a program that you need to do, and it's free, right? It's free. That way we eliminate the red tape. We eliminate your budgets, right? Because oftentimes if you don't have it in your budget, you can't do it. Well, we're saying we're not going to get held up by any of those things. We're just going to come in and we're just going to do it. And all you need to do is provide us a space, and from there we will do the recalibration training. So it's been awesome for them to spread the word, and hopefully the word will continue to spread as we have so many cities to get to.
Well, certainly, I am just really delighted to learn of the work that you do and to be part of the spreading of the word. Tell us how to be in touch with you to get more information about Bridging the Gap.
You can go to my website at marcuslwalker.com, and that's Marcus with a C, MarcusLwalker.com. There's plenty of information about Bridging the Gap, the exchange program. Also, numbers there where you can get in touch with our team, and we can talk more about scheduling a program. Also, on our Twitter handle, I post information there often, and that's just at Marcus L. Walker on Twitter. And so that'd be great if you can keep up with us, contact me. I'd love to just work with you so that we can create change. We can't sit back. Last thing I'll say to you is, there are peacemakers, there's peace breakers, and there's peace waiters. And the peacemakers are those that go forward and try to make it happen. Those peace waiters are those that just sit back and wait for others to do it. And then the peace breakers, well, we know what those are.
Right.
And I'm a peacemaker, and I'm interested in this change across the nation. That's what my life is dedicated to.
Marcus, again, I thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. And again, that website is MarcusLwalker.com. Thank you so much, Marcus.
Thank you for having me.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk, which is brought to you on a daily basis as an educational public service. It is not intended to interfere or change any work that you may choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Remember, you can go to myndtalk.org every day. You can also download the Mind Talk app at the iTunes store. So there are lots of ways for you to be in touch with Mind Talk. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, PAMELA at mynddalk.org. And folks, I want you to always remember, if it's unacceptable, that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.